Fine Dining, the search for the most mediocre restaurant in America, is a podcast where comedian Michael Ornelas is traveling the country, eating at all chain restaurants in search of the perfectly average 5.0 out of 10 dining experience, the objective middle threshold of where bad becomes good. Friend of the Doughboys, Marissa Pinson and John Glover were the most recent guests as they reviewed Costco's Food Court. It's a two-part episode that covers everything from discontinued menu items to how many Costco hot dogs they could fit in their mouths. Damn, I wish I was on that episode. I'd crush that. Head over to linktree.com/finediningpodcast, FINEDININGPODCAST, and click B's giveaway to enter a giveaway for an all expenses paid trip to your local Applebee's, the current front runner for the most mediocre restaurant in America at 5.02 out of 10 for you and up to three of your friends. And you could watch or listen to Fine Dining on your platform of choice while you're there. Enter by May 1st, and the winner will be announced on the May 8th episode. Disclaimer, $50 will be provided for transportation along with a $200 Applebee gift card. I love doing those fast read disclaimer things. Go give Fine Dining a listen, the search for the most mediocre restaurant in America.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
What's up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty. It's me, your boy, the number one frog boy. The number one frog boy. The number one frog boy. Joining me, as always, in the High and Mighty studios is my nearly silent co-host, Arthur Gabris, and guest, I would say maybe even my pod father. You inspired me to get into podcasting.
Oh, my goodness.
Jeff Rubin.
Oh, hello. Thank you. It's so fun. I listen to your show and like I've heard this intro. And so for those who have never had the privilege of being here and watching John do it, it's a very physical performance. Yeah. That was like a full body thing you just did.
I'm a little all over the place.
Yeah, I loved it.
That's awesome.
You're also holding, this is fascinating for me, because you have a similar setup to me where you're using like two mics and a Zoom to record things, and you're holding like the table mic stand like you're at an open mic.
I'm doing it like Freddie Mercury. Yeah. Like the top.
I'm going to pick up some stuff and bring back to New York here. This is fun.
Yeah, because this feels weird to hold just a mic sitting,
Yeah.
It's a little too cash. Yeah. And then this just feels like... is pretty much how I roll here.
I love it. I mean, yeah, I'm sorry for everyone who doesn't have a podcast and is not interested already.
It's 2017. I would say 80% of the listeners have a podcast.
Or thinking about starting one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we should do one. We could talk about movies. We're like three white guys. Oh, wait. I'm blowing up my own spot. Jeff, thank you so much for coming
on. My pleasure. Thank you for the very generous opening.
Oh, yeah. I've been dying to have you on. I've been a guest of your podcast a handful of times.
Yes. I mean, and also...
And your web shows.
Yeah. You were a very frequent... besides Pat, who was like my co-host, you were by far the most frequent guest because you were always... I mean, very reliable. Always made what we were doing funny. And I never asked to be on podcasts. It's weird, but like when you were starting a podcast, I was like, I gotta be on that show.
Oh yeah, no shit.
When you first started, I emailed you and I was like, I want to be on your podcast.
And,
I just haven't been in LA and blah, 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 but we're
right,
doing it.
Because I like to do it in person. So that's the only thing. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I like to do, I interview a lot of people. Like I do a lot of interviews and like that I don't mind doing over Skype because it's like question. And then I like listen to it for a bit and then it's like, okay, another question. But when I'm just like bullshitting with someone as we are about to do, hardcore, that I try to do in real life.
I was hoping you were going to actually interview me about my Blade One work. I mentioned this and I now that we're officially on air together, I should let shitheads and the listeners know that your podcast is exactly... I never want to get into a podcast because I get so tired of premises or conceits or something like that. And I couldn't think of one that I would want to dedicate enough time to. But then listening to your podcast over the years, I think you were around for like a year and a half, 2 years before I even started. Yeah. And I was like, oh, this is what I want to do. The overlying theme of your podcast is you.
Yeah.
It's Jeff Rubin. It's like the stuff you're into. And since you call it the Jeff Rubin Show, it makes sense.
You know, I had when I first started the show, I started like a notepad file of ideas for the show. And I was like, oh, maybe I'll do this and maybe I'll do that. And then like there was a bunch of ideas and I was like, oh, maybe there'll be segments. And then like at the top, I wrote like, you just introduce the show and then something happens and then that's it. And like that's basically still the format.
Right. Exactly.
It's just and like, yeah. Yeah.
So when I was making my podcast, I was like, this is going to be pretty much a straight rip of Jeff Rubin's show.
Yeah,
but because it's me, it's going to keep that different.
Yeah, you've said that. You've said that, and it's very nice of you, but I don't hear that at all listening to your show, and I think it's great. And, you know, it reminds me, I remember when Pete Holmes started his show, and, like, it seemed like it might be a lot like WTF, because it was, like, interviewing comedians, but of course it's not at all, because, right, like, you put it through Pete, the lens of Pete, and it's, like, a totally different thing. And I think...
And it's mostly Pete having guests on so he could talk about himself to them.
Well, but... anyway, I'm just saying that, like, if you, you know, so if it was inspiring for you, that's very nice. But, like, I it's totally its own thing, and that's,
yeah,
that's
it's
great.
Its own beast now. And now we're both on HeadGum, so it feels
yeah.
So we decided that we wanted to double dip into a special crossover.
Yeah,
setup.
This is exciting. I was like, I want novel. I like novelty episodes.
Oh,
you know?
I'm 100%. Yeah. I'm into it. Yeah.
So tell the audience what we're doing.
For we're doing an episode of my podcast. Right now, you're listening to it, and we're going to be talking about the film Blade One. Then next week, on Tuesday, 5 days from today, if you're listening to this the day it comes out, if not, you're so skewed, Jeff will have a episode on his podcast with me as the guest, talking about Blade Two.
And then we're going to start another podcast just to cover Blade Three. Yeah. I'm just kidding. I refuse to acknowledge Blade Three.
Yeah, you and I are just going to go on how did this get made for Blade Trinity, and then hopefully...
What is your... I actually don't know this. We pitched a few ideas back and forth about what we were going to do. I fucking love the Blade movies so much. And I
love them when they came out, and I love them even more upon rewatch.
Okay,
I forgot
great.
How
I,
much...
I didn't know I, what you're...
They
what
held
you're,
up so
they
hard.
They do hold up really well. And maybe we can start, you know, talking about the movies.
Let's do
it. I actually saw Blade pretty recent. I rewatched them both for this, but I actually saw them pretty recently. BAM, which is the Brooklyn Academy of Music in Brooklyn, they had a Wesley Snipes retrospective. They also have a movie theater, and they show cool old movies sometimes. They had a month of Wesley Snipes movies, and it made me realize, like, how good Wesley Snipes' career is.
Passenger 57 is so fucking good.
They showed Passenger 57, White Men Can't Jump,
so
Major
good.
League,
great.
The Blades... New Jack City.
Oh shit!
Like these are
yeah.
like good movies, and it made me think. Like, it made me appreciate Wesley Snipes' career, you know, and that like he made cool movies, and he it made me think of The Rock actually, because The Rock, we all love The Rock, you know, he's like literally the most popular actor in America right now.
I'm edging towards Rock Overload.
Well, the thing is that like I think The Rock's good in every movie he's in. Like everyone likes The Rock.
Yeah.
The Rock's funny. But I don't know there's, like, a great movie that The Rock is in yet. And I follow him on Instagram, as we all do.
Yeah.
And, like, I see he's, like, on the set of Rampage. We're making the movie out of the video game Rampage with my bros at Warner Brothers Studios.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know about this one. And it made me think, like, I don't know, just, like, when you reach a certain level of actor, like, you can start... I mean, it just made me think, like, how Wesley Snipes must have worked. I want to credit him for being in so many good movies over the course of his career.
Right, like, quality movies,
not just
blockbusters.
Yeah. And,
I mean, they mostly were blockbusters, too, but he also is in... Like, Blade is fucking great.
Blade is so good. So
Blade is one of the first Marvel movies, right?
Yeah, so that's, I think, probably, the, like, the thing it will be remembered for is, like, the first... It's kind of the first modern superhero movie, because if you look at the Marvel movies before that... it's like that Roger Corman Fantastic Four,
right.
That like Captain America from like 1990.
Oh shit!
And
yeah.
Stuff like well, there's another bad one that had come out just a few years before that. I think I wrote it down. But then
Spawn. No, that was
Spawn. Spawn's not Marvel, but like that was like what comic book movies were then. And then this came out, and like it kind of feels pretty modern. Like it doesn't feel like if you watch like Christopher Reeve Superman or even Tim Burton Batman, which is like a good movie, like it feels old a little, you
it
know, like it feels
does.
A little dusty, like it feels like it was made a long time ago.
Blade still fucking feels fresh, which is crazy. As a matter of fact, watching Blade with some of the practical effects and some of the weird stuff, I was like, I wish more modern comic book movies looked like Blade.
Yeah And Blade's also the other thing about Blade is it predates, I was reminded a lot of The Matrix, and I had to, like, check to see when The Matrix came out. This predates The Matrix.
I know.
You know, a lot of, like, trench coats and rave culture.
Yeah, it's like goth rave. It's very 90s, right?
And there's also, like, kung fu plus guns. There's, like, sort of a Japanese action manga type stuff plus American sensibilities that I think The Matrix really,
Matrix
like, weaponized
too.
A few years later.
So this is 91? Is
99, I think. Or 98, maybe.
Yeah.
And, it's really good. Like, some of the effects, especially in Blade One, are like a little goofy, and
but
like,
I kind of like them.
Oh yeah. They're charming as hell. Like
the swelling of the heads, like
yeah,
when
like
they,
it's like a Gushers commercial.
Yeah, exactly. I think.
Yeah.
I thought that's fun though, because that made it feel like a comic book. Because outside of that stuff, the Blade movies just feel like a dark, like they feel like what Underworld wishes they were.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
I know people are huge fans of Underworld.
I've never really seen them.
I don't dislike it, but I'm Blade. When I watch Underworld, especially like Blade 2, which we'll talk about on Jeff Rubin.
Yeah,
Jeff
yeah. Rubin,
Blade 2, it has like all those tunnel sequences, and it feels like just like Underworld.
Right.
Blade 1, though, is so fucking awesome. They set the lore up in like a minute.
Yeah, no. That's something. It's kind of interesting how it feels modern, but there's a few things where it's almost ahead of its time. One, it's an R-rated movie, which like comic movies kind of moved away from and are only recently moving back to. But Blade calls a lot of people motherfuckers, you know,
yes.
Like in addition to the violence and gore.
Wesley Snipes is a badass. The reason the Blade movies rule is because it truly... It has, like, every check mark that you need for, like, a fun movie. Wait, 99 puts me at 16 or 17 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
This movie comes out, and it features guns, karate, vampires, raves, like, electronic music, tons of blood, tons of gore, like, hot chicks doing sketchy shit. Like, this is, like, the fucking, you know, that hits, like, 9 fucking pressure points.
Would you remember seeing Blade? I actually remember seeing it for the first time, which is weird.
Yeah, I watched it in college, I feel like. I missed it when it first came out, but I watched it like freshman year or something.
I remember watching it, not in college, but I remember watching it with a friend, like at a friend's place. And I actually remember it because we saw it on HBO or something, and we like caught it in the middle, and it was so good that we were like, like, you know, HBO's playing it again, and we were like, let's now sit here and watch it from the beginning. Like, we watched it, like, 1.5 times, like, the very
that's
first
the best
time
way
I saw
to do it. Yeah. Man, that blood rave in the beginning.
Yeah.
Like, that's a movie that you, like, that, now knowing a little bit more about Hollywood, that's the shit where you, like, you sell that in the room on that pitch of just, like,
yeah.
And then the fucking faucets open and blood comes all over everyone.
You know what I noticed watching it again is that the victim, I mean, first of all, there's kind of a clever scene where, like, the guy seems like kind of a, it's kind of a clever twist where the guy seems like kind of a predatory guy.
Yeah.
And he's, like, being a little sleazy with this woman. But then the woman is the one who's actually, like, leading him into a trap in this club. That guy is
Lem from The Shield. Yeah.
There's a few people in this movie, and more in Blade 2, but there's a few people, like, actors I've come to like that I didn't realize were in Blade.
I love watching old good movies and then revealing, like, 9 people that now have huge careers.
Right.
Oh, shit, of course that guy's so good in this moment.
But, yeah, it's interesting how Blade has no origin story, essentially. Like, it's kind of like there's a little bit pre-credits, and then there's, like, a little bit, like, 2/3 of the way through the movie.
Yeah, his mom was bit by a vampire while she was pregnant.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah.
like, all you need.
But it works, and I wish more... you know, that's, like, I guess Iron Man made $1 billion, and then, like, that kind of became the blueprint for, like, PG-13, and the first one's The Origin, and Iron Man's a great movie, but it was kind of refreshing to see how Blade kind of hits the ground running
I'm so tired of origin stories.
Yeah.
Like, we know how America knows how Spider-Man became Spider-Man.
Yeah. Well, thankfully, the new Spider-Man, which we're recording this before it comes out, so I haven't seen it, of course, but it seems like, I mean, in the new Spider-Man, I think in Civil War, there's a line where Tony Stark's like, how long you been doing this? And he's like, I've been doing it 3 months already. And I was like, all right, great.
Perfect. Yeah, we don't have that.
I was like relieved to hear that line. Yeah. You know, it's okay in like Ant-Man or something like that, where like we're not all familiar with the characters.
Yeah.
But
Or they're going to be integrated into another movie, so we need a little bit of a setup. But
I actually just did the Batman VR game, and the Batman VR game has a moment with the... in Crime Alley where she's getting shot, and I'm like, God, like, if I have to go to Crime Alley one more time.
I'm so tired of seeing Batman's parents get killed.
A cool thing about it, not to get sidetracked, one interesting thing about that you wouldn't experience in another medium in the Batman virtual reality game is, like, in Crime Alley, you're very short because, like, you're wearing the VR helmet. So, like, your perspective is that of a kid, and, like, you have to, like, look up to kind of see your parents.
Oh, that's cool.
So that's like,
fucking
that's
cool.
Something that, like, a take on our way of conveying what Crime Alley is, that, like, you couldn't get through a movie or even a comic book or a video game. So, like, I guess they found something new, but just as soon as I saw Crime Alley, I rolled my eyes.
Who gives a fuck? Because they're dead.
And that was
my mother's name is Martha, too.
Yeah. That movie, of course, like, as soon as I saw Crime Alley in that movie, I was like, that ain't good.
Oh, fuck, yeah, no bueno.
What do you know about Kris Kristofferson? Because he's a legendary musician, well-respected actor. I don't know anything about him. But
me
the Blade
neither.
Movies.
And I remember because now I'm remembering. Maybe I didn't watch Blade in college because I remember, or I was in college age, but I watched it with my dad. And because my dad, I'm like, Dad, who is this guy? He's like, oh, he's a great musician.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't know. And I'm like, oh, that's cool that he's an actor. I'm like, is this his only movie? He's like, no, he's in a lot of movies too.
Yeah, he's I think he's in A Star, which let me tell you, I've never seen. Yeah. A Star is Born with Barbara Streisand, who's also, of course, a musician. And I think he's like a pretty well, I mean, he's definitely like a legendary country musician. And I think he's a pretty well-regarded actor, too. He's pretty great in these movies.
He's actually awesome in these
movies. It struck
me
watching Blade 1 how little he's actually in it. Like, he's really not in it very much. Like, he's probably got 5 or 6 scenes, maybe.
But they must have loved him so much to, and we'll talk about this in another episode, to like just retcon him into the movie.
Yeah, they bring him back. What about Stephen Dorff? What's your Stephen Dorff?
Stephen Dorff is...
So Stephen Dorff plays Deacon Frost, the bad guy.
Great fucking name. Feels like right out of Diablo.
He is... Deacon Frost is a character in the comic books. I don't know. I don't have a lot of experience with Blade in the comic books.
That's what I was going to say is that Blade... I was a comic book nerd for a while growing up, and Blade was just a book I never read.
Yeah. I remember him being on the 90s Spider-Man cartoon briefly, but like he's not a character I had a lot of... Anyway, Deacon Frost is a villain in Blade, but in the... traditionally, I bet they've updated it since the movie came out. They usually do. But like he was like an older person. Like it seems like basically they just took his name.
Yeah.
Because the youth and like his youthful rebelliousness is actually like thematically important for Deacon. That's like kind of who his character
is. Deacon Frost is really fun. Stephen Dorff is surprisingly fun in this movie. He feels like a goofy Ethan Hawke.
He is pretty fun in the movie. And it's weird. He's kind of fun. It's not like a great all-time great villain performance, but it's definitely fun. He's definitely having
fun. He's got some fun moments.
He definitely has some fun moments that I remember. There's a lot of shots in this movie that like I really remember, you know,
same
like watching
here.
Again like
same here.
Deacon, like there's that towards the end. We're going all spoilers on this, right? Like we can
if you haven't caught Blade 1, just don't listen to this podcast.
At the end when he's like becoming the blood god or whatever, there's that like crane shot where it's like looking down at him and like his arm get, when he gets cut in half and his arm getting cut off. There's like a lot of shots in this movie that really stand out to me.
The blood rave is like burned in my head. I'm sure most people who've seen Blade will never forget like when they're like
The other the other thing with Deacon Frost, the other thing that's Matrix like is there's a scene where he dodges some of Blade's bullets in slow motion. It's like not nearly as good as the Matrix, but it's like kind of the same
idea.
They
do some bullet time in both movies.
Yeah, like, it's like it's definitely leading up to the Matrix.
I love the prevalence of sunglasses in these movies.
Yeah.
I also recently watched Terminator 2 again. It's
Terminator 2
sunglasses
might be the best
movie
of all
time. Just so prominent.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in Blade they're vampires, right? So it's
so
like
they have to wear.
I don't know. Like the sunglasses, I think if you ask the writer, David S. Goyer, who we should probably discuss a little bit because he's had an interesting career. I think if you ask him, like they represent something because like people take them from Blade and like he gets them back at key moments. Like I think it's supposed to mean something besides just being cool. I don't know exactly.
Right.
It's just generally his mojo maybe or something.
But again, that so feels like the Matrix, just like trench coats and fucking. I didn't even put that together until you said it at the beginning of this podcast, but it like opened up my mind of just like, yeah, the Matrix owes a lot to Blade.
Well, it's if you look at the Matrix, like you can almost describe. Like, all action movies are basically, like, pre and post The Matrix, I think, right? And, like, Blade is pre The Matrix, technically, but it's, like, you would not know that if you watched it. It feels like it's post-Matrix. I mean, Terminator 2 is probably another dividing line for action movies. Like, if you look at, like, 80s... If you look at pre-Terminator 2 and after Terminator 2, they got a lot different and a lot, you know? What did I want to say about... So, Stephen Dorff is interesting, because I feel like this is one of his... I feel like people know his name. I think he was like a teen heartthrob, right?
I couldn't name you five. I mean, was he's in The Lost Boys?
Is he in The Lost Boys? I'm not sure.
Or am I getting him confused with Ethan Hawke? Or
I'm not a no Lost. I saw Lost Boys as a kid, and I don't remember it that well.
But Dorff, he's in like a bunch.
He's
of
He's in
stupid
SFW, movies. Or not SF? That's Christian Slater. He's in some sort of radio movie, though, right? Am I making that up? You know what I really know him from is speaking of watching HBO growing up is The Gate. Do you ever see The Gate? Like he's
where
like,
she stabs the monster in the eye with the Barbie feet.
The Gate is like an 80s, certainly pre-Terminator 2 horror movie. We're a very young, like Stephen Dorff. He's like a very young kid in that movie. And they play a record and open up a gate to hell in their house.
Yeah,
it's like
they get an eye on his hand. And I remember a distinct imagery from that movie.
That movie has, at least in my mind, like an awesome practical effects finale where there's like all sorts of like stop motion demons crawling out of the hole or something.
Yeah, I'm curious what that would look like now if I watched it.
Stephen Dorff still works. Like I looked it up. Like he's been in a movie, at least one movie every year between now and Blade. But like I don't know what a lot. I wasn't familiar with
a lot of them.
There's a few there's a few that you've seen, but like I don't know. He didn't seem like
he in Sleepers, that movie with Brad Pitt and those
maybe.
Guys?
I can't recall. But even that's a while ago.
Yeah, but Dorff is really fun. Like he, I always. Fuck Paxton Pullman. I always thought Stephen Dorff and Ethan Hawke were like side by side, but Ethan Hawke is like the art versus Stephen Dorff is the commerce in a right. weird way. Yeah.
Something else I thought watching this movie was the like vampires as evil conglomerate kind of business people.
Yeah.
I was wondering if how much that this movie invented that. And
because that ends up being a big thing, right? That
yeah.
in like a lot of movies where it's like the monsters are businessmen in a way,
right.
too. They're more in, like, oh, the bad guys are also board members,
right?
You know?
And like the evil's like sophisticated, and like right. they have a lawyer, and like
yeah.
it made me think of Buffy and specifically Angel, because on Angel,
I never watch Angel. I watch Buffy though.
On Angel, sort of the main bad guy over the course of the show is like an evil law firm, like Wolfram and Hart, and yeah. I think they're more demonic than vampires, or they're certainly vampire adjacent, and they. It reminded me, Angel, Buffy, and this premiere around the same time, but I think Wolfram and Hart's like a few years later.
Right.
And, but it reminded me of like, you ever see, Ethan Hawke, that movie Daybreakers?
Yeah,
you ever
yeah.
see that movie Daybreakers? That's like a good like corporate vampire movie.
Right. Yeah, it's so, I love that. And I love that it's like rave and like old money at the same time. Because it feels holdover like from Count Dracula.
Yeah, well, Dracula is actually the bad guy in Blade 3, which I
right.
don't remember at all, but I read the Wikipedia page on the way over here.
I remember that Ryan Reynolds and... Is it Giselle? No, it's not
Jessica
Giselle. Jessica Biel. I knew it was someone hot.
Yeah.
I remember
right.
that Reynolds and Jessica Biel are in that. And Ryan Reynolds, I remember being funny in that.
I actually love... So I love Blade 1, as we've clearly established.
Yeah.
I own most of the Pixar movies, a few concert DVDs, The Simpsons, Arrested Development. I own like 3 feature films on DVD, and 2 of them are Blade 1 and 2.
That's awesome.
I think Blade 1 might have been the first thing I bought online. Like, I remember buying it like... on eBay or something. I was like, I remember
that's
like
really
an
fun.
Early online transaction.
One of Tiffany's first jobs was at New Line Cinemas, and she got access to their library, and I was like, you gotta get Blade 1 and 2 right away.
All that's a setup that I have never actually even finished watching Blade 3. Like, I love Blade 1 and 2 in my soul, and I was like not even mad. I was just like, this is boring, and turned off Blade 3. It's so
funny,
it's really bad. And also, I think the first of the Ryan Reynolds attempts to be in a comic book movie, you know?
Yeah, the first of like 8.
That, Green Lantern, of course, which I complain about every 4 or 5 episodes of my podcast, even though I just saw it once 7 years ago or whatever. He did that BRPD movie where they were like hell detectives or something.
Yes,
that was a comic book.
Yes.
He was Deadpool in the Wolverine Logan.
In the Wolverine Origins.
The Wolverine Origins movie. Before finally like making, you know, finally landing it with Deadpool. But that guy, it took him a few tries, but he finally nailed
Lucky
it.
Lucky he got so many fucking tries,
yeah.
dude. That's so crazy.
DC
and Marvel, he jumped back and forth.
Yeah, and even BRPD, or whatever that one, that's like a weird indie thing, too.
Yeah.
Blade is
what? So what were some high... Like, fuck, Donal Logue is great in this movie.
Oh, I love Donal Logue. I love me some Donal. What do you say? What's up with Donal? It's like...
I say Donal.
Donal? Donal?
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you ever watch... Let's explain to people who don't know Donal Logue is, because there's a good chance you'd recognize him if you don't know him by name.
Yeah, if you're in your 30s, you might know him as the cab driver from the MTV
that's so funny.
Promos from like the early 90s.
He's got a really cool, varied career. Like he plays like lots of different people.
He feels like the kind of guy that like writers and directors and other actors love.
Yes.
Because he's like always in something that's got some cred to it in a cool role.
Yeah, you know what you would dig if you haven't seen it is the TV
Terriers.
Of Terriers.
Yeah, I haven't seen
yeah,
it
you
yet.
Would, Terriers, of course, Sean Ryan from The Shield, which you already mentioned.
Right, right.
Terriers is like one of those one-season wonder shows that stars him. I can't remember the other actor's name, but they're both great in it.
Everyone's recommended
Terriers.
I do like Donal Logue a lot.
It's good, and it's like 13 episodes, and it's like sad they never made more of it, but it's like pretty self-contained, and I would like... Not only you, but your listeners, strong recommendation. It's one that everyone, it's cultish, but I'm probably not the first. You knew where I was
going
already.
Right, yeah.
He's great in that. And he's like the star of that, you know?
Oh, cool.
He was on that show, there were like robbers or something, like Defenders of Liberty, Knights of something.
Oh.
It was like a Fox show in like the
2000s. Was it 10 items or less? No.
No, it was like Knights of Prosperity or something like that.
Oh, yes. And he was also on in the movie The Tao of Steve.
I never
Tao
saw that.
Steve.
But yeah, he's really had a varied career. His name's I'm assuming it's Donal, like Donald, but without the D. If you Google that, like go look at his face. You'll recognize
him. And Logue,
and he's so fun in this movie. I mean, Blade... takes himself so, like, Wesley Snipes is like not, is very serious and like kind of a black hole for fun in this movie.
But they kind of give him a couple of things that make him cool.
There's one thing where he like, I think after he clears out the rave, he gives him, he just enjoys a nice fist pump for no one but himself.
Yeah, I've remembered that was so, there's a couple of great moments in both movies, one and two, where he kind of just smiles and it's like enough for you to be like, oh, he, at least he enjoys kicking people's asses. Yeah. It's like really fun.
So he in Blade, wait, what were we saying? Sorry.
I was saying that Donald Logue brings all the fun into the movie.
And Stephen Dorff too. Like, I guess the villains are like the fun and silly ones. Donal is sort of the, it's kind of funny, like watching this again, I realize like what an incompetent henchman he is. Like, he's got this like world conquering plan to like resurrect the blood god, and he's got this like kind of goofy guy who's afraid of
who's
Blade as like
his
number
cut
two.
Off, like, four times.
Yeah, it seems like not great. You know, not great delegation.
It's not,
on,
yeah,
on
it's
Deacon's
not a,
part.
It's not an equivalent level of like badassdom.
How familiar are you, as sort of my action movie rabbi? How familiar are you with Wesley Snipes's martial arts prowess? Because
he's actually like a black belt. Like,
yeah,
he's a high ranking martial artist because he's good in.
Yeah,
Blade.
He is.
His fighting is. They do very good job in Blade, which I think is what The Matrix then did, and then like if you want to jump even down again, you can say to John Wick, of just like, it's a shootout, it's fucking guns, we got pistols, dual pistols, shotguns, all that, then it's like, now it's a sword, now I'm using a sword and I'm sword fighting other guys, then for some reason 20 humans come in and I have to fist fight them. You know what I mean? It's like one of those things where
a lot
it's
of
like
rioting.
Yeah, and you love it. And you got to love it because then you get to see him do karate after he runs out of bullets.
Yeah, I like that he has a sheath for his sword in his trench coat, you know? Like, it's not a sheath, it's like built into the coat. It's like underneath the trench coat part
right,
of the coat.
So
but there's
awesome.
Still a sword handle sticking out, so it's like not subtle. You know, watching it again, it was kind of fun. I was trying to do like a deep read. I've seen these movies so many times. Especially Blade 2. I literally saw Blade 2 a month ago. Like, who do you know that's seen Blade 2 twice in the past month?
No, you are now the only person.
And,
yeah.
So, I was trying to, and like, we were talking about it earlier, how like, I think there's like a sort of a youth versus like old man theme to the movie, right?
Yeah.
Like, that seems like, it's like the vampires are kind of like these like old, there's this old thing and they're very content with the way things currently are. And Deacon, he's like
the young rich.
He doesn't want to be subservient to the humans. But there's all this stuff where like he's throwing parties and like they're like, your parties are attracting too much attention. But he just like wants to have fun. He's like very like hedonistic.
You see that parallel a lot in like modern movies where it's like they like Iron Fist or a bunch of other shit where it's like the kid is like edging out the parents of the company, and it's like this is not what the corporation was built on, this is not what the empire was built on, you know, and then it's more about the fun and the hedonism and shit, and then it's like a touch more evil, it's the change of the status quo,
right? But then I guess in Blade, that guy who is trying to take it over, the youth is actually the bad guy, and
right,
he is defeated in the end. So it almost in a weird way comes down on the sides of like the old stodgy people. It's like, you know, get in line, be happy with your being underground vampires.
Yeah, it's almost like saying like vampires aren't bad guys. Like they mention it a lot in both movies that it's a disease, a sexually transmitted disease.
I was wondering about that too, because I feel like that like is a theme I've seen visited since, like, it's definitely in Buffy.
Yeah.
And Buffy uses like a demon as a metaphor like every week. So like any sort of like evil thing standing for something has been used over like the 12 seasons of Buffy plus Angel. but also in other things, I was wondering how, and I've never read or seen any of this, but how Anne Ricey that was, like the vampire sexually transmitted disease. Cause I just know there's sexy vampires in that. So
yeah, that's true. That's,
and also very, it's like early,
and
it's
and
like
True Blood, and True Blood is like that too.
Oh, True Blood is sexually, or STD is like a theme in True Blood.
Sex. It's a very, like vampires are very sexual. Like,
yeah,
that's always been the case. I mean, it's like, and it's an exchange of bodily fluids in a way.
Right. Right. I guess Interview with a Vampire is the first one that like kind of made it explicit, or the first one I can think. I mean, I'm sure there's like some 70s movie or something.
Right.
But then like Blade, and then of course like you get to like Twilight, and
right,
it's like
romantic,
cliche now,
yeah,
you know? It's
yeah,
it's and Buffy of course, and it's almost cliche now to have like sexy vampires. But the idea of like vampirism as an STD, and particularly there's this weird thing where Deacon is not a full vampire. He's almost like a mudblood. Pardon my slurs, but
no, here on High and Mighty, slurs are allowed, even if they are against the fictional types of people.
Right, like the Deacon, they're sort of like, it's implied that Deacon feels genealogically inferior because he wasn't born a vampire. Like, he has a scar from scarlet fever when he was a kid.
Right.
That's never healed because he wasn't a vampire when he was a kid. And, like, the other vampires, like, the Vampire Council, including Udo Kier, who's like, I was like, who is this guy? And I looked him up and I was like, right. You know Udo Kier?
I saw the name in the credits and I recognized it, but I didn't know who he was.
He's like a giant man with, like, piercing blue eyes who plays a vampire in virtually every... He's in a lot of vampire movies, and he's in a lot of what's his name, Lars von Trier type stuff.
Okay,
he's like,
I
got
know,
a very distinct
I know who
look.
You're talking about.
He plays the guy. He's like the main vampire board member who they take to the beach and, like, you know, kill him. He's the vampire board member with the most speaking lines.
That was a really cool sequence, the beach sequence when they all just put down the visors on their and it's like, oh, I thought that would lead to a... When I rewatched it, I was like, oh, this is such a good idea. This should be a sequence later on in the movie that vampires are on the street in, like, full coverage with the fucking helmets and masks on, like in a Bruce Lee movie. You know,
right.
Like, they all have the motorcycle helmets on to protect their... And then Blade could be like, if he punches through the glass, they get fried. You know, that would be such a cool action sequence.
Isn't there a... What is the deal? I actually couldn't quite understand when Deacon does appear in broad daylight in the scene where he dodges those bullets and he's like holding that girl.
Yeah.
Like, what is the, how did he do that? He had like some sort of new sunscreen they were developing or something.
I don't fully understand.
I didn't get that.
Blade 2 does an even worse job at this, but like the logic of like what works and what doesn't always.
Oh, well, there's a scene where they're like, crosses, that's from the movies, you know? Right. Like, there's definitely one of those.
Garlic, silver, and sunlight.
Yeah, they're pretty picky. It's like, crosses, that's from the movie. Garlic? No, that'll work.
Garlic, that's
real. That makes sense. Let me consult my notes. I want to see what other... There's definitely some things I want to make sure I touch on here.
I fucking love the setup of the sword that blows your hand off.
Like the fingerprint. So at the BAM retrospective, they showed Blade 1 and 2 in one sitting.
Oh.
And I was late. I was late because I think it was Passover or some other Jewish holiday. It was like, oh, hurry it up, everybody, you know?
Give me the matzah. I gotta go.
I gotta go. So I went. And I came in the middle of Blade 1, or like towards the end of Blade 1, actually, which is, it's like the person at the desk was like, you know, the movie's already started. I was like, oh, if I know Blade, he's just getting wound up. And I came in the part where Stephen Dorff is holding the sword and he's like walking around. I'm like, awesome. I got right here at the part where his hand explodes. And then he like flicks it off because I had missed the part where the sword does explode someone's
that takes
hand.
Donald Logue.
But Stephen Dorff knows it's going to happen. This is later in the movie.
That's
so, he gets me as the viewer who had seen Blade so many times, it still caught me off guard. I was like, oh no.
Oh, right. Shit,
like,
he knows.
I was like, oh man, Blade's in trouble now. This guy's like, it was like seeing it for the first time. I was like legitimately surprised when Deacon Frost got one over on Blade. I was like, uh-oh. Like,
Blade catches a lot of stuff behind his back.
Yeah. The sword exploding into... The sword handle exploding is like a theme, and it saves the day at the end,
it's a nice throw, and then it pops the fucking serum out.
I gotta say, watching it at the end, I couldn't remember how he beats him. Like, I remember, like, I remember the awesome sequence where all the fucking... where he summons the blood god and all the, like, CGI demons crawl out of their mouths.
Literally, you see the hands pull the cheeks back and then
fly through Deacon, and and then Blade cuts him in half. And I like, remember all that. And then they're fighting. I was like, how does Blade win? And I couldn't remember that he uses the chemical that blows him up, like the Gushers commercial. Like, it's weird because that is such a funny shot. Like,
right.
And we were saying how many shots are so memorable to me in that movie. And like that one, I couldn't remember.
I distinctly remember because I laughed when it happened again in this. When after he's thrown one of those little tubes, and this is again we were talking about a little bit, what are those tubes, the blue ones?
I think it's set up. I just watched them both, so I'm having trouble remembering because I think in both movies someone develops a new chemical that explodes vampires.
Right. It's like an anticoagulant or whatever.
I think that's in the second one, but I think in the first one the nurse character, like, she makes something that like react. Like, remember she tells Whistler to like look at something under the microscope and it explodes, like it reacts with their blood or something.
I think that's
what's in the vials.
And so he hits Deacon with one, And then Deacon leaps, and the shot that they use is like a throwback, like, and he's got,
it's like a Bruce Lee thing where it's like, and you get that, whoa. Like,
yeah, but he's doing like the hands up, like Nosferatu leap, where his knees are tucked and his hands are above his head. And he's, and that's when fucking Blade whips like nine fucking tubes into his chest, and he lands. And I distinctly remember that shot of him landing and like looking down. Then all of a sudden he starts like swelling up.
That is a very like kung fu movie. That is like particularly Japanese. Like that slow motion shot, and it's kind of got like that like kung fu movie like sound effect. I tried to do it with my mouth a second ago. It went terribly. Yeah. Hopefully people just know what I'm talking about.
Where it's like the background is blurry and the foreground.
But then also someone like throwing 10 things and like cutting them all in someone. Yeah. Like that feels very kung fu movie.
There's a lot of like throwback like old school Shaw Brothers kung fu stuff in this movie.
But it's also very American with like the raves and like the technology and like a lot. It feels distinctly American too, which is cool.
And I love like, man, the weapons he uses are so gangster. Like there's like two sequences, maybe I just rewatched them, so I may be blending, but like where he uses like ostensibly what are like silver sharpened dildos, like chrome vibrators. He's like wielding them and he just keeps stabbing people with them. I'm like, that's so fucking badass.
Well, it's Father's Day. You know what that means. Time to shave your dad's nuts. I'm sorry, I misread that. Time to get your dad a Father's Day gift, or any dad, or a guy who wants to be a dad, or someone who used to be a dad. Although that's a sad story. Look, do yourself a favor, get on dollarshaveclub.com and get high quality blades and amazing shave butter delivered right to your door, or right to your dad's door. You know how dads love gimmicks? They would love to have razors delivered to their house, and they get this thing. Yeah, my son is good with technology and he sends me these razors every month, and now my balls are perfectly smooth. Or maybe your dad shaves his whole face, and then in which case he'll get even more use out of the Dollar Shave Club blades. And you're wondering, if you're shaving your big ass dad face, you're gonna run out of blades. But that's just it, you get them new every month. So for a limited time, new members get their first month of the Executive Razor with a tube of their Dr. Carver shave butter for only $5 with free shipping. After that, your razors are just a few bucks a month. $15 value, $5. In your first month's box, you get a handle, a full cassette of 4 exclusive cartridges, and a tube of shave butter. And you can only get this offer now by going to dollarshaveclub.com/mighty. That's dollarshaveclub.com/mighty to get your dad a gift that keeps on giving.
What about the scene, maybe the best scene of the movie, where with the giant fat like ancient creature that they torture?
Oh yeah, what was his name? I forget.
I think it's, well, it's I actually was going to ask you if you could figure out what gender it was, because I think they refer to it as a he, but his name is Pearl, and like it's unclear to me.
Oh,
and
it's a record keeper.
Yeah, right, and it's such like a weird creature that
I think it was a guy, because I don't think they'd have a tits out on it.
It's topless, but it's got like, it's this giant like flabby beast thing, and it's got these like giant floppy tits, and like
it makes no sense, but I love when they fucking start shining.
It is a disgusting set piece.
So it must be from the comics, right?
I don't know.
It's
the comics.
So specific. I mean, that's so funny to say. Like, it could be just a very good idea from the writer or director.
Something.
Let's talk about it, David Goyer.
Right? Oh yeah. Wait. Something before. Yeah. Just the vampire language is something else. Like the artificial language, you know, is like a cool thing. Like that they have like their own kind of vampire culture, you know, like
with like familiars and all that stuff. I kind of like with the little sign
and like the glyphs.
Yeah.
And there's
that's
a great,
what they're called, glyphs.
I like the scene with the, where they're in the boardroom and they're speaking vampire language. It's like, Vaktox, Sandutu, Blade, Vaktox. Like, Blade is the one word they have not translated into vampire yet.
Vaktox, Blade, Daywalker, Vaktox.
I wonder if they went like, you know, now when you do that, like the Dothraki guy I had on my podcast, the guy created the Dothraki language, and I know he worked on the language for like Aliens vs. Cowboys. I know there's a lot of shows now that do
have a language,
have an artificial language that they like, you know, really make a functioning language. And I wonder if they did that for Blade. I doubt it. Like,
I doubt it's true. They were like, just mumble and say Blade.
Yeah, this is before like cinematic universes and that.
They didn't need to establish all that.
Yeah. Okay. So David S. Goyer wrote this movie. I think he's written a lot of comic books too.
Yeah, and a lot of comic book movies.
Right. So notably, the Dark Knight trilogy, which is like, you know, many would say is the greatest comic book movie achievement of all time.
And also, I believe,
I'm going to get the list in front of me. This is
I believe American Gods.
This is the new Star show. I haven't watched that yet. I want to move my phone away from the mic because I'm afraid it's going to, like, you know, do the cell phone thing. But yeah, David S. Goyer directed the third Blade movie, which I already mentioned I hated.
Yeah.
So it's like I never know what to think about him. He's written some movies that turned out less than good and some movies that turned out bad. I mean, it's tough to, like, you know, when he's the writer. I don't know. I don't know how much to credit or blame him.
If you hit 3.5 out of 10 pitches, you're like an amazing hitter.
That's true.
If 50% of your movies are very good, yeah, you're fine in my book.
Yeah, so Blade 1 and 2. I mean, the Dark Knight trilogy, like, really
gives him a lot of credit.
But I guess you got to give him credit for, like, essentially writing, like, the first good comic book movie. Like, if you go back and watch Spawn, it is unwatchably bad.
What's crazy about Blade 2 is, like, about Blade 1, Blade also, I mean, it feels weird for us to talk about it, but it is a black lead, too.
Right, yeah. I was trying to think about how... Is that a piece of the movie? Like, I think it is, particularly in the second one where Ron Perlman, and we can talk about this, makes a fairly racist comment early on to, like, taunt Blade. And, yeah, I was wondering if that, I don't know, how intentional that is. Like, how Blade's blackness, like, plays into his character. John, what are your thoughts on the subject?
Well, you know, I have a lot of strong opinions on this. No, it's just crazy because it's like,
I think it's a piece of the character for sure. Like, if they made, like, a Blade movie with, like, a white guy, that's definitely wrong. So I think we can say that it's a piece of his character.
Right, yeah. And it's just interesting because we didn't get around to a black superhero again until Black Panther, and that movie hasn't even come out yet.
Right, yeah.
It's like the first one did, and it did very well.
Yeah, yeah.
It just sucks that it's like, why couldn't Iron Man be black? I mean, Robert Downey Jr. was perfect casting for Tony Stark, but why couldn't, like, you know, that's the moment you could take the opportunity and do whatever you want there.
All right, so here are some movies that David S. Goyer wrote. First of all, he wrote Dark City, which is not a comic movie, but fucking rules hard. Dark City is so good. It came out the same year as Blade, quite a year for David S. Goyer. Blade 2, Blade 3, Batman Begins, The Invisible, I don't remember what that is. He's a director of that, excuse me. Ghost Rider, he produced. Jumper, he wrote. The Dark Knight, Ghost Rider 2, Spirit of Vengeance.
Great, insane movie, by the way.
Really?
Yes. Absolutely insane.
I remember.
Nicolas Cage pisses fire off the back of a moving truck.
My preference for Nicolas Cage insane hell themed movies is, what's the one about driving? Hell Drive or
Drive Me to Hell or
Drive Me to Hell, whatever that one is. That's my preference for Nicolas Cage movies about vehicles in hell.
Yeah, that's fair.
So Dark Knight Rises, and then he worked most recently on Man of Steel and Batman vs Superman: Dawn of Justice. So he's like pretty like one of the big writers of comic book movies, you know,
world,
and he really invented it with Blade in a lot of ways.
Blade, yeah, it's just it's crazy how good Blade was, and then you didn't get another good comic book movie for so long.
Well, X-Men came out like 2 years later.
Oh, X-Men. Yeah.
Blade is so forgotten. People talk about good comic movies, and they always. I think when you ask people like what are the first like comic movies that kick this thing off, they'll say X-Men, and they'll say the Sam Raimi Spider-Man.
Right,
like Blade is really forgotten, and it was a hit. It was a big hit.
Yeah, and it was fucking cool. It was like you talking about how it leads into the Matrix is insane. I can't believe I didn't register that even rewatching it. It's like black long trench coats, and like it is like Keanu Reeves, like Neo is the one, so he has like a little bit of a special power. Blade being the Daywalker,
right.
Sort
well, that's like some Joseph Campbell shit. I think I don't actually know anything about Joseph Campbell, but whenever I hear anything cliche, I'm like, that's probably some Joseph Campbell shit.
Let's talk a little bit about what being a Daywalker means.
Okay, so Blade has all the strengths of humans and weaknesses. He's a vampire and he has all their strengths and stuff, but he can walk around during the day.
Sun doesn't affect him.
Yeah.
But he does have the thirst. The sun, garlic, and silver don't affect him, but he does have the thirst.
Right.
And it's because his mom was pregnant, was bit by a vampire, by Deacon Frost,
It's funny. As many times as I see this seen this movie, I totally forgot that Deacon Frost was the vampire. It's sort of like meaningless at the end.
Yeah, I forget that. That's his mom, too, right?
Yeah. That's his mom at the end.
Who's a vampire and he kills her.
Right. I mean, so it does actually, it does bring back that origin story at the end. Like, it actually does... It's interesting, like, it's not an origin story. It's just, like, the most eventful week of Blade's life, where, like, he meets this woman, she cures him of his thing, he kills Deacon Frost upsets the existing vampire order.
Right.
Whistler dies. So it's just like, you just catch him during this. And he finally meets his mother, who he thought was dead, but has been a vampire.
Has to kill her.
Been a sexy Deacon Frost vampire for a long time.
I know. I was like, holy shit, she looks so young. Oh, right, vampires.
Right, right. And it's sort of a twist at the end that she's there. Something else I picked up on watching the movie that I've never noticed watching the movie 1,000 times is... the nurse, who's like the female lead of the movie, which is a very thankless role. I wrote down her name. What's that? Let me see what that actress's name is. She's not been being the lead female in an action movie is a tough gig.
It's not a springboard.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
Your
how
set decoration.
Like they don't like she's deaf. Like no one even alludes to her character in Blade 2. You know,
she gets
like,
I know, right? She doesn't even exist in Blade 2. She has a couple of cool moments in Blade 1 though. She has that moment where I thought, which was a cool moment from Deacon too, when he's like, say hello to an old friend. And it's they have the guy that she used to work with.
So I didn't realize, as many times I've seen that movie, that's the guy from that opening scene. Like, and that guy in that opening scene is he kind of creeps on her a little.
Right.
Like,
and he does it again in when he's a vampire. He goes, do you ever wonder why we didn't work out? Mm-hmm. He's like all fucked up and shit.
Yeah. And like, but even when he's like not a zombie vampire or whatever,
he's asleep.
Yeah. He's like, he says something to her and she's like, I told you not. Like, he's been sexually harassing her and she like politely has shut it down and he's like still doing it. Yeah. And, I'm watching it, like, I just never realized that. And I was like, oh, they're just making it okay for him to die in a few moments, just like making it cool that this guy's going to die. But then they do bring it back at the end.
Yeah, and he's still sleazy, even in the fucking afterlife, which is awesome.
So you know who else is a great character? Great, like, fourth level character in this movie is there's one of the familiars they have is that cop who, like, comes to kill her.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And Blade finds the cop and, like, knocks him around the apartment for information, and there's just like a minute of the movie where this like cop is that he must be a stuntman or something because there's like a solid
just getting
minute,
the shit kicked out of him all for one minute.
He gets thrown into things by Wesley Snipes for like a solid minute of the movie.
Yeah, and it looks so casual.
Yeah,
because Blade's strength is played because he's not fighting a vampire in this moment, so his strength is played for such laughs when he's like. Just throws the guy against the wall, knocks, and the woman is standing there in her own apartment, just watching a daywalker smash a fucking police officer.
And then even later, when he tracks him to the place, like he lets him go, and then he tracks him,
right?
And then like when he finds him, he like beats him up some more, like throws him into a car, and like I was just like, this guy's pretty good. Like that actor gets thrown around a lot, and like he makes it look pretty convincing. So cop familiar. If you're listening to this, great job.
Blade also features that moment where Whistler rescues them when he like blows open the door and starts spraying machine gun fire.
Yeah.
And that Blade and Blade 2 both suffer from but they predate the idea of taking cover in action movies.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's never like at some point some movie got a little more realistic and cover became a thing where people would duck, reload and stuff. Blade predates that. Whistler literally goes, listen up, motherfuckers. He's just a 70-year-old man standing there shooting a machine gun, like taking up the whole frame. Right. Blade is always just standing. The bad guys all just run into a room and start immediately firing. There's like nobody hiding for cover and protecting themselves in any way.
That's a cool scene, too, when Blade is... that's the scene immediately after the giant fat man-woman thing. And they're in, like, the vampire archives, and there's, like, a vampire Bible. And that movie actually does a really good job, like, world building without, like, stopping for things. Like, Blade's like, this is the vampire Bible. Like, it's their history or whatever, like that. But, like, just that Deacon Frost is, like, a 12-year-old girl who's a vampire in his employment. It's like, that implies a lot. And, like, there's some story there, you know?
Yeah. And she's the little karate chick.
Right, right. But, like, you see her at the party, too. Yeah. And, like, it's like, what is it like to be, like, with this crew as an eternal 12-year-old? I think maybe that's in a... Interview with a Vampire, which I've never seen.
I think Kirsten Dunst is like a child vampire.
But that like, and it's in Buffy a little too. Everything's in Buffy. But that, you know, it's cool. It's like it's pretty well written movie. Like, I mean, it's not like it was not nominated for any Oscars that year, but it's like very tight. Like, there's no loose ends. Like
the action sequences are set up great.
Yeah, it moves forward. Like, you know what everyone wants in any moment. Like, a complaint I've had about a lot of the recent Fast and the Furious movies is like they're fun and they're good, but like I don't think they make sense. And not that they don't make sense that like a car is flying between two buildings, like that's cool. I don't care, but like
why are they still doing?
Yeah, if you just like pause the movie and like why are they there? Like, what do they want? What does she want? Like, yeah. None of that. But,
family. The answer is family.
But in Blade, it makes it like it's just simple. Like, it's just a good, simple movie. But there's little pockets of interesting world building going on. And like,
yeah, I like that moment because you talking about that, you kind of hear what the doctor or nurse wants when she says like, oh, you didn't find a cure. He's like, no, I'm not showing you a cure.
Right.
And it's like, oh, she got attacked by vampires, or like they've been fucking, and she hates them now, and she's gonna use her skill set. Like, she feels driven in that movie, which is never true of a second female lead. In
yeah,
movie.
Even the creepy dude who gets killed and then comes back at the very end, like, even that's like better than it had. Like, that they didn't need to make that guy creepy. Like, they could, like, even that's just like someone took a minute to think about, like, how can we set this up for later?
Right.
And, you know, that Blade 2 has a lot of good, like, things that they set up that
and
like
they
then
get called back. Yeah,
yeah.
Well, I guess, we'll talk about that.
But I guess the first one does that a little bit too. I'm trying to think exactly
well,
how.
Well, the sword handle is a great
sword handle.
Yeah, that's
a good
like
one.
Which is like a Chekhov moment. You see it like five times.
Yeah, which is just like good screenwriting. You know, just like setting things up and like not
planting
like,
all those little.
Yeah, like
seeds,
nothing comes out of nowhere. Yeah. Like everything's explained, and it's really a tight little movie. Like it's good. I watched it. I forced someone to. I was like, "Hey, I gotta watch Blade 1," and I've made someone watch it this week, and they'd never seen it. And like 30 minutes in, they were like, "This is pretty good."
Right?
Like they were doing it to be polite, and they were did not expect it to be good. And they were like, "This is a totally good watchable movie."
I think there's a great moment in Blade when he comes. He kills a bunch of vampires. Then when the vampire, a semi-dead vampire, ends up at the hospital, this is how the woman gets involved. When the woman gets bit...
It's Donald Logue.
It's Donald Logue, right? Oh, he's burned.
Yeah.
He's almost completely crispy. Also, very fun effects, but he's still alive and he's slowly recovering. When Blade rescues her and he runs up to the window with her when he's being chased by the cops and he looks back... And he just takes her
and
throws her across the street from one building window to land on the roof, like in a dumpster on the other building. And then when the guys come in, he looks back and he just... And Blade never really makes any facial expressions the entire movie. And he is a black dude dressed in all black with black sunglasses. And he just turns and smiles like big, bright white teeth at the guys. And then... leaps out and then like rolls right next to the chick. He like threw like he couldn't jump with her, but he could throw her separately and then jump separately.
You know what I remember? Another thing I noticed that I noticed watching this movie again that I've never picked up on before is after that scene, her arm is dislocated and he pops it back in. Later in the movie, his arm is dislocated and she pops it back in.
Oh,
I don't know what that means exactly, but I'm just like, there's nothing like that in Spawn, you know?
Right.
Like, there's nothing like that in, like...
That's right, right. She goes, my arm, it's dislocated, and he just...
Yeah, I mean...
When does she do it to him? I'm trying to remember.
I can't recall, but I just knew... It's in the movie.
That's a very cool way to set up a love interest for a superhero, if there are two people, like, willing to just pop each other's shoulders back in.
Blade 1 and 2 both have, like, that quasi-love interest, where it's like, obviously she's the love interest, but they never officially... They never make that official. They never kiss or anything.
Right,
but like,
right. But there's something going on.
But, like, she's a love interest, I guess. And I don't know. It's like, imagine if there was like a scene in that movie where like they're just like by a fire and he's like, I don't know how much longer I can do this, you know?
Yeah,
and she's
exactly.
like caresses
like,
it. And then
like you see his sunglasses with a reflection of a campfire and he's like, and she comes up behind him, puts his arms around him. And it's like, you do what you need to do, you know?
And Blade 2, we can talk about this more. Same thing. There's like a woman in that movie who's like, they're obviously supposed to be fucking, but like they're just, you know, there's just like some sexual tension, but like never
dealt
with.
I think that's what makes the Blade movies kind of like they don't go by like the formula that you need to have all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, they kind of just fucking dive into the action. Let's just talk about a couple of Blade 1 action set pieces. Like, what were some of your what were some of the favorite moments?
Well, the opening, strong opening.
Fucking shotguns work great in movies.
What's
like
the ending? The ending is probably the best part, I guess. I mean, the CG is just like so fun, you know, when like
and he's like swelling up.
I think we've covered the major action scenes, which are the opening rave scene, the Vampire Archives theme where Whistler shows up, the end. Those are, I think, the three major action scenes, right?
Yeah.
Blade 2 has more of them.
Yeah,
it's
Blade
the
2
higher
has
budget.
Way more.
There's a higher budget.
Yeah.
But they're all, I mean, there's other vampires he fights. You know, the scene where Donal wakes up all burnt and kills the creepy nurse. you can see like he's like full body makeup, like his body's charred, and he gets up, he's like blah, 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 tongue's going out, like it looks like he's just having like the most fun day on set.
He's just running
around half naked, covered in body charred makeup, just being like blah, 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 blah.
He has a great moment with Stephen Dorff later too, where they're talking about go get him alive, and he's like alive, like, and I forget exactly what happens, but like Stephen Dorff plays along with something Donald Logue is saying, and it feels completely improvised. Like they're just too. Right. I wish I could remember what the sequence is, but there's a very funny interaction between.
Yeah,
the
it's like at that party scene, and he's like, "I want him alive," and he's like, kind of, he's like, "Whoa, hold, like, what? Well, are you sure about that?" And he's just like, kind of afraid of it. You know what might be my favorite scene, and I think it's how the Vampire Archives ends. My favorite shot is him rubbing Donal Logue's face against the subway and like removing half his face.
Yes.
And then when the subway goes by and she's and like Blade's looking at it and he's holding the he's like hold on and she's like I didn't like how I did that voice. She's like hold on and she and she's like you're not gonna do it and then he like grabs onto the subway. He's like, I think about that when I see a subway car going by me in New York all the time. Just like grabbing onto it and seeing my arm leave with the train while my body stays on
the
platform.
Is that how he dislocates his shoulder?
I don't think so.
No, I'm
trying
to remember.
But he just like grabs onto the back of the subway. And I thought, and then he gets on the subway and I was like, is this the movie? There's so many of these scenes where like they get on the subway and there's like a weird, and then like everyone on the subway is looking at them.
Yeah, but they just like nod and sit down.
Yeah, it's New York and it's crazy, but they just sit down. And
that is a very used trope like movies that take place in New York. Or even if it's like, there's some crazy motherfucker on the F train. It's like, man, it's the F train, brother. You know,
it's like, the movie is in New York, right? It's never. I don't know that it's actually explicitly said. It's not. It's like Vancouver, New York.
Yeah,
but
it's like Russia in two, right?
Two opens in Russia, but
ends in Russia.
Right, right.
There's like a coda in Russia where he cuts a fucking guy's head.
But
off.
I think it is. I think it's in New York, but I'm not sure it's ever explicitly stated. You know, one other thing. I'm just like, gotta get all my. When else am I gonna have a chance to talk to people about Blade One? Sort of going back to that youth thing, the other thing that makes Deacon-y very like youth focused is he like translates. This is something I never really picked up on. This is going back to that youth theme. He translates the vampire text and how to resurrect the blood god with the computer. And Udo right. Kier comes in. He's like, we've been working on this for years and like no one can translate it. It's a fool's error.
Right.
But he's like, sitting there listening to, like, it's not an iPod, it's probably too early, but he's, like, blasting techno music. There's a lot of techno music in this movie, even when they're not at a rave.
Oh, yeah, and Blade 2, also, yeah. It was 99, like, I was, like, listening to Chemical Brothers and Fatboy Slim and Orbital at this point in my life, and Daft Punk, right. These were the bands. So, like, Blade hit, and I was like, yeah!
But he translates it with a computer, and, like, that's how he's able to do this thing that no one was able to do before. Yeah. And there's a great, I love, like... I mean, it's cool because Blade is not dated. Like, it feels like a modern movie, like right. You keep saying. But you see the computer imagery part.
Yeah.
And the computer's like, the computer like translates it and then like draws a little diagram of what he's going to do. So like you as the viewer can understand what the finale of the movie is.
It shows like the blood come down and how it goes in and stuff like
that.
There's
also a scene after he kills Whistler where Frost leaves a VHS tape for Blade Defied. And like Blade puts the tape and he's like... chunk, and like you can see on the tape it's like SP and it's like, oh cool, like Frost isn't like cheaping out here trying to fit more on the tape. He's
It's funny that Frost like took the time to set up like a high 8 camera and like, converted to VHS.
Yeah, those are banging the ass in those days. So it's like funny whenever, I mean, to the movie's credit,
it really does
so
it doesn't feel dated at all.
I know I keep bringing up Buffy. I watched Buffy not when it was on. I watched it a while ago, probably 8 or 9 years ago at this point, but not when it was on. And Buffy's the same thing. Like, it feels like a new show. Like, it feels like there's arcs, and like it feels like a new modern show, and it's as good as a new modern show. But like in the first season, there's a scene where Willow, who's Allison Hannigan, hands like Buffy like a 3.5 inch disc, and I was like, holy shit! Like, you know, like it feels like it's from the sixth. Like, it's
that feels so archaic.
It feels so like even a CD feels archaic at this point. But to see something that feels modern and then see someone pull out one of those diskettes is like
that's so funny.
It's to Buffy's credit and it's to Blade's credit that like even though the technology is now dated, like the movie doesn't feel like it at all.
Yeah, and it feels good. All right, so we can wrap this up here because
we still have an hour of Blade talk.
You and I have to transition to your podcast. Yeah. So Jeff, do you have anything you want to plug while you're
just the podcast, which is the Jeff Rubin Show on the wonderful HeadGum Network. It's usually interviewing weird people who are not interviewed on other podcasts, like very excited, my friend Scott, who does a pizza tour.
Yeah.
Justin, who runs a, you know, I listened to your marijuana episode with
Ry Pritchard,
with the guy from Vice, which was great. And like right before I recorded that one with my friend Justin, who runs a marijuana testing facility, like a lab in Oregon where they like test for potency. He, like, started a business where they opened in a lab.
Oh, that's
so it's
cool.
Like cool, weird people who you hopefully don't get to hear interviewed
if on
podcast.
If you're a fan of High and Mighty, and I'm assuming listeners of this show,
if you made it this far.
Yeah, they cherry pick, I'm assuming, because based on my numbers, they are all over the place. So I'm sure people cherry pick based on topics. Your podcast is good for that as
definitely,
well.
Definitely.
If you're worried about, you don't want to get into 100 episodes, you could pick the 10 topics that intrigue you the most.
I highly
recommend the summer movie previews.
Oh, yeah,
with
Pat Castles. With
Pat, those are my favorite.
Yeah, thank you. It's funny, you can see, it's funny because, like, I really do try to find weird people, and, like, sometimes they do work. Like, I love when one flops because, like, it was, like, not flops, it's fine, but, like, when one doesn't, like, when one is, like, just kind of at my floor of downloads,
yeah,
just because it was so specific and I can see people, those are my favorites.
Right, like, because I never thought I would give a shit about the guy who invented the Dothraki language for Game of Thrones, but that episode was fantastic.
Even that one's pretty obvious because, I mean, Game of Thrones is, like, very popular, so it's, like, easy to get people to listen to that, but, like, I did one with, like, the Paper Airplane World Champion.
Oh, yeah. That was great too.
Yeah, but
that,
like, not a lot of people listen to that one, which is like fine. But like, I love when not a lot of people listen because that means I like found something insane. Like, I like finding the most obscure thing
niche,
possible.
Yeah,
yeah, that's like
you had the guy who had the Bahaman.
Yeah, I wish that's the one. Actually, thank you for bringing that up. That is the best one I think I've done in a long time. And if anyone is just like any old topic, I did one with this guy. From the he runs something called the Museum of Who Let the Dogs Out. He is a world expert in Who Let the Dogs Out. He's been researching it. It's not really a museum. It's more of a collection of things he has that he displays when he can at like art spaces or whatever. But it is a insane. I mean, he, you know, like if you make a gold record, like you get like a framed gold record with like the cover and like how he has two of them for that song that he got from like the account, because like everyone in the credits gets one. Like he got the gold record from like the accountant. He has like 50 t-shirts because it was like so merchandisable. But what's really interesting is he knows so much about the history of the song, and the song, yes, Who Let the Dogs Out, has a much more interesting history than you know. Like, it's
isn't
actually,
it about like who let all these ugly chicks into the club?
No, it's actually the opposite.
I thought that's what the song was about.
It's a cover. I'm telling you secondhand, and he told me a month ago, so I might get some of this wrong. You go listen to the episode, but it's a cover of another song. Like, there's another. First of all, Who Let the Dogs Out is a cover, which is already mind blowing. Like, the verses are different, but the Who Let the Dogs Out thing is a cover. And additionally, there's some songs before it that have like a Who Let the Dogs Out hoo-hoo-hoo thing in them that sued or didn't sue, or there was controversy about. So there really is a pretty interesting history. What was your question? I ignored it.
I thought it was the...
Oh, yeah. So the original thing, like, was actually a response to... The original version was actually a response to hip-hop at the time, as it was told to me, had a lot of misogynistic songs, Beat My Bitch With a Bat, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And someone wanted to do a positive song, and Who Let the Dogs... The dogs were actually, like, the... like
scuzzy dudes.
The scuzzy dude. Like, the dogs were actually, like, the patriarchy... And who let them out was, I don't know, society or something.
Yeah, who let them be in charge.
And, I don't know that you can get any of that from the Baha Men, especially, like, with the video. It's, like, kind of just, like, a good party time anthem. But in its initial conception by Anselm something, I think, it was actually, like, the opposite of that. It was, like, a very... it was a response to like these really misogynistic songs that were coming out at the time. It's crazy, and it's like that's what I love to do is find like the most boring topic and like find someone who's like made it interesting. And let me tell you, that guy's a winner. So
that's
go
awesome.
Back and check that one out.
Well, so check out the Jeff Rubin show, and at least check it out this coming Tuesday for the episode of Blade 2 that I'll be talking about on his podcast. As always, I'm at John Gabris on Twitter. You're at Jeff Rubin Show.
At Jeff Rubin Show. I always tweet at you at Gabris, and you've tweeted at me like several times. Like, I'm John Gabris, goddammit.
Yeah,
it's great.
Some fucking Gabriella Ganelli has my fucking name. She hasn't.
I have Jeff Rubin Show. I register Jeff Rubin on like every social. Like, if I hear about a new social network, I'll go register Jeff Rubin on it now.
Smart,
never again. Never
smart
again.
Move. Yeah. You know? Even if I never use Peach.
Yeah.
At least.
I have Jeff Rubin on Peach.
If it blows up, I have
I'm ready for it.
Yeah,
I got it on what's that weird one with an O?
Oh, I wouldn't even know.
I don't know. It was like it's like
I'm out of the loop on
whatever.
It.
Okay.
Yeah. Gabriel,
look for me, look for Jeff on the weird social network with an O where I have the name Jeff Rubin.
Yeah, add me. Search Jeff Rubin on that social network with the word O in, with the letter O in it. Gabrus.com/shirts. Check out The Little Hours coming to theaters at the end of the month.
Oh, I can't wait to see that.
Also, check out the Action Boys Patreon. Patreon.com/Action Boys with a Z. Me, Stanger, Rogers are launching on June 19th.
Are you guys having guests? Can I start bothering you to be on that one too?
We are going to have some guest episodes, so I feel like we would have you on.
Next time I'm in LA. Yeah, next time I'm in LA.
Let's make it work.
Cool.
All right. Well, thank you, Jeff.
Thanks for having me, John.
Bye, shitheads.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.